covering technology and innovation throughout the capital city. Welcome to Austin iLab on the new Talk Radio 96.3 and 1370.
Hello and welcome to the Austin Innovation Lab. We are bringing you real-life stories of technology and innovation in and around the Austin area. I am your host, Stuart Frazier, here with John Ellison, filling in for Kyle.
Good afternoon, Austin, and welcome to the Austin iLab.
John, I'm going to throw you a curveball like I always do to Kyle. What's new? What's going on this week?
Oh, what's happening, son? Oh, not much. I'm just living a dream.
I'm more of a fastball hitter, actually. Well, I actually had a really exciting week. I was out of town, so I missed the last iLab broadcast. But I was in Pennsylvania visiting my nephew, who was just born a couple months ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
No, that's really cool. Well, you missed last week, but you know kind of the topic and what we're going over this whole month. It's kind of co-op month.
That's right. We're talking about some of the history of co-ops and in the context of Austin, some of the interesting and innovative co-ops that have developed in Central Texas over the last couple of decades.
Yeah, and I think who we have on the show today is, almost needs no introduction because everybody knows who they are.
And they are the Wheatsville Co-op.
And we've got Rosemarie Klee, president of the board of the Wheatsville Co-op, sitting with us. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So why don't you jump in and tell us kind of who and what is the Wheatsville Co-op? And I feel silly asking that question because I've been in Austin for 10 years. And so this is for those people who...
We'll just assume there are a few people out there who may not have heard of Wheatsville.
Well, no, I think it's a really appropriate question because the Wheatsville Co-op has been in Austin for many, many years, but it's many things to many people. And so it bears some explanation because you might know it from one direction, but I want to kind of describe the breadth of who we are. So Wheatsville was born in Austin, Texas in 1976, and we've been around... doing our thing since then. It was a group of really inspired people who really wanted to change the world on many fronts who started the organization. And some of the initial thoughts were, you know, thinking about our economic system and our power structures and also our food system. So back then, you know, you couldn't get tofu, you couldn't get organic produce. And so there was this driver around that. But then there was also, you know, you can imagine the climate of the 60s and the 70s and really wanting to change the world and like this feeling that that was possible. And so it was sort of an experiment in a way for, can we have this alternate model for how we engage in, you know, getting our food and having our economy, and could that work and how could that change society? So I love to add that, you know, the purpose of the Wheatsville Co-op is to promote the transformation of society towards cooperation, justice, and non-exploitation. We do that by selling groceries. And there's this Andy Warhol saying, a grocery cart is the most powerful vehicle for social change. And I think that's a really cool thought to just chew on a little bit, no pun intended there, but, you know, just the fact that we all have to participate in our food system somehow. And so there's a lot of power in how you opt to participate. So
it's a choice that everyone has to make.
Exactly. And it makes a really big difference because we all do it a lot. So what can I tell you about the Wheatsville Co-op? We've been at our location at 3101 Guadalupe for over 20 years now. And a few years ago, we successfully completed a renovation project. So hopefully everyone who's listening has gotten a chance to go see our fabulous new store. We are very proud of that location, and actually we recently unveiled plans to open a second location at 4001 South Lamar.
I heard rumors of that.
It's going to be open March next year.
That's incredible. And so after 20 years, this is really the first next step that y'all are opening a location, right?
Yes. And of course, we've been around for 36 years, right. But, you know, like to get to the point where we opened, when we did the remodel on our store. And so Wheatsville is cooperatively owned. That means that our consumers, or there are a few different models for what it means to be a co-op. There are worker-owned co-ops, such as Red Rabbit Bakery, which makes awesome vegan donuts. If you don't know, check them out. You can buy their donuts at Wheatsville.
And they're actually coming on the show not next week, but we're getting them on the show. So that's a good plug there.
Yeah, I really encourage people to kind of check those concepts out because worker co-ops are really important, especially in this financial time when people are trying to find their way and find some way to be empowered and not just be victims of our economy. And those models of people figuring out what they do well and what they love to do, starting their own business that does that, I think there are a lot of people that are inclined to engage in that kind of community because that's what it means to live in Austin, that we want to be part of supporting each other and having the world that we want, and we're really thoughtful about it. So Wheatsville has over 11,000 owners now.
Wow.
And We are open to non-owners that shop with us, but part of the principle of co-ops is that they exist to create benefit for their owners. So what we do is we provide the kind of groceries that our owners want. So back in the day when Wheatsville was started, it was motivated a lot by the fact that you couldn't get certain kind of foods, and having a co-op was a way of being able to access those. And that actually hails from the Rochdale pioneers that first started co-ops. They were living in, you know, it was the industrial era. They were living in a company town owned, it was a weaving company. The company owned the apartments, they owned the stores. The workers were just sick of being exploited. They were tired of their flour being cut by gypsum, and they got together and they said, how are we going to empower ourselves? Let's pool our resources, let's buy our groceries, and we'll know, you know, that they are pure. And
and this town, where was this actually happening? Was it in America or was it in England?
That was in England. The very first co-op, the Rochdale Pioneers, are from a small weaving town in England. And that model has quickly spread even, you know, across the world. And actually, there's a guy in Japan who, in the kind of Depression era, was a major force behind creating a lot of the Depression era co-ops that we have in the United States today. And actually, the reason that 2012 was declared by the United Nations to be the International Year of the Co-op is the sense that co-ops offer a really important economic solution for nations across the world and for communities especially that are struggling the most.
Sure, without regard to economic structures or political intentions.
Yeah, we like to talk about the democratization of wealth and this idea that, you know, we the people can come together and collaborate to find ways to create benefit for ourselves. And this isn't, you know, this extreme collectivism. It's really about what are the things that we really need on a practical level? To what extent can this co-op, the organization that we define, create that benefit that we want to see?
And so you know a lot about co-ops. You are very knowledgeable, and it makes sense that you are the president of the board at Wheatsville Co-op. So how did you get into the co-op, and how long have you been involved there?
I first ran for the board of Wheatsville and was elected in 2005, and I've been president since 2008. And I have to say, when I started, I thought I was running for a two-year term, and I would learn a lot, and I would kind of figure out what the next thing I wanted to do with the community would be, you know, just in my desire to help, you know, save the world. And Wheatsville Co-op has been this amazing thing in my life to really discover what it means and what the power of it is. And actually, I was just in PA last week for our annual conference in Philadelphia, the Consumers Cooperative Management Association, just to see like co-ops as a movement. So that was really attractive to me. This wasn't just about like developing skills around organizing groups of people or being a policy governance type of organization, which is an interesting analogy to like how our city is run, even our council management form of government. Those are great skills that we learn, but it provides this real viable model for people that really care about the reality that each one of us has power to make a difference in this world, that co-ops actually provide an avenue for us to do something tangible and sustainable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's great information. We're going to take a break right there and then come back and learn more about the Wheatsville Co-op.
Stay tuned. More Austin iLab is coming up on the new Talk Radio 96.3 and 1370. Welcome back to Austin iLab on the new Talk Radio 96.3 and 1370.
Hello and welcome back to the Austin Innovation Lab. We are here in Co-op Month, so we're sitting down and visiting with different co-ops around Austin. Today we have Rosemarie Klee, president of the board of Wheatsville Co-op. And before the break, we were talking about how you've been the president since 2008, and so you were thinking you got involved in it, thinking you would just have a two-year term, learn something, and then move on. But you've been there a lot longer than just 2 years, and so tell us a little bit more about how you got involved in Wheatsville.
You know, it came really down to, I was in undergrad for a long time, and when I finally kind of emerged from that, it was the opportunity to really think about the choices that we make, what it means to be a community, how we participate in economy. It was a time when people were talking a lot about Walmart and the impact it was having on communities. I will admit that I'm a tree hugger. I'm actually a water hugger. I'm a water resources engineer. And so I think a lot about, you know, just like kind of at a systems level and then also in terms of sustainability on all these different levels. So for me, there was a lot of appeal because of the way that Wheatsville intersects with all these different issues. Like, you could come to it purely because you care about food issues, or you come to it purely because you care about economy, or you come to it purely because you care about the connections that we create as a community and how we support each other. And Wheatsville has a lot to do on each one of those fronts. And so it's really multifaceted in that regard. The other thing, and this is probably sounds a little wonky, but I kind of think about, I mean, I really do think about how to save the world. And, you know, I think it's a question that we all ask ourselves. And I don't mean to, you know, say that in this like really eccentric way, as much as just on a practical level, like how do we each participate in making things better? And when I look at our democracy and the challenges that we face in society and how each one of us is a piece of that, Wheatsville is a really becomes so amazing and interesting to me as this sort of microcosm. And I kind of make this analogy of, you know, the idea of Japanese garden is this idea of like nature that's more perfect than nature. It's this model of what perfect nature can be. And to some extent, I really feel like Wheatsville is this model of what perfect democracy can be. Not to say that we are perfect, but this idea of like cultivating that with the way that we treat each other, with the way that we participate, the way that we act as stewards and citizens. And that if we in our society, whether it's just the Austin community or as Texans or as Americans, really kind of knew our place as stewards and citizens, that we would be in a really different position than we are today. And I think that piece really fascinates me, how there's power in the fact that we have 11,000 people that are our owners that choose to be part of what we're doing about this transformation of society, about these relationships built around trust and honesty and dignity and integrity.
Talk to us about some of those 11,000 members. These are all people in Central Texas. What's the relationship between Wheatsville and Austin?
Wheatsville definitely is very much about trying to, again, like create benefit for our owners, but also in a lot of ways to sort of imagine the bigger picture of what our owners want to create and what we can't do alone. I mean, that point of cooperation. And I think this ties a lot into the ideas of innovation, like that if we collaborate, we have a lot more power. And it's this idea of what inspires us that gets what the degree to which we can inspire each other, that idea gets the most traction, and then we can make something happen. So our community, people that come to us, when we listen to who they are and what they value about Wheatsville, there's this huge range of things. And some of the most beautiful things are people talking about, I love that my kids love coming here because it's not a nightmare to go grocery shopping. You think about like imagining someone with a small kid going through this like enormous grocery store and the kind of atmosphere that you have there, and instead feeling like they know my kid's name, my kid loves coming here. We have these like mini grocery carts that they shop with. So like just things that seem really simple, the fact that, you know, we care about caring for everyone that we have interaction with. It's not just about being nice and courteous, it's about like actually caring about them. That I think there's a lot of power in treating other human beings with that kind of care and like touching each other that way. So these things that seem really simple and subtle on some level are, I think, very powerful when you think about the sum of those parts. And then on a practical level, when we think about what it means to be a co-op, there are sort of these precepts around that it does need to create financial benefit for people. It does need to be transparent as an organization. And that is part of instilling the sense of trust. And there does need to be this like real sense of awareness of how things fit together. So the economic transactions, we have special deals that are offered for people that are owners. So we have these co-op deals, the sales that run. We have, you know, a lot of different offerings every month. We also have a patronage dividend program. So basically, if we make a net profit at the end of the year, that we actually return a portion of that profit to our owners. So there's a real like economic benefit to the organization. So we've kind of talked about like the fuzzy, I feel good being there. My kids like being there, to like real practical economic stuff. And then I think what people also really value is this sense of I trust the product selection. And there's this idea of the despair of overwhelming choice, and that like you actually trust the mindset with which the product selection has been cultivated, and that you don't really need to belabor that. You know, when there was a scare around the safety of tomatoes or spinach, like people that shopped at Wheatsville had no fear around what they were getting in that time. I think that extends to just the way that we treat everyone along the supply chain. So, you know, we look at Black Star Co-op is a great thing to point to, because how rare is it in that sector for people to make a living wage and all have health insurance? And like we as the community said, hey, we want this thing to exist. And I mean, certainly we want beer and hanging out, but we also really value the opportunity to use our money, not only to get great food and great beer, but to know how people are treated along the way. And so we have that in the way that we cultivate our employees, the way that we relate to our vendors, and in the way that we choose products that minimize the harm.
So, and that's great. And the analogy I thought of, you were talking about people really trust your selection. I remember I spent 6 weeks in the Ukraine, and you don't have a whole lot of choices there. You walk into a grocery store, there's one type of milk, one type of cereal. And so when I came back and went to HEB, I got all red, hot, sweaty, just walking into the store. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of advantages there. But tell us a little bit about why go co-op? You know, why should somebody choose to shop at a co-op?
Thank you for asking that question. I think it's one of those things. It's going to be hard for me to answer in one way or in a very concise way, because I think there are a lot of different reasons for everyone. I know for me, and I think this is what comes out when I talk about it, really is just I care like fundamentally at a systems level at how I participate in the economy and about sustainability and really the ripple effect of that transaction. I think there's the why co-op piece. It's around like we are really about delivering a high level of customer service. So if you just care about having it be easy, you know, like the convenience of shopping at Wheatsville, given the size and the smoothness of transactions, there's that kind of practical answer. There's the prices that we offer, and we don't really try to compete necessarily on price, but I think, you know, if you compare generally, you know, if you're trying to buy kind of comparable products at a different store, and you add up the entire like value between like price and trust and convenience, I think there are benefits that people are really seeing on that level. I think, too, there's just a sense of, like, co-op as a model, and why co-op? Because we are all living in this world today, and we see that it's not okay in terms of the way our economy is going. And if we want to have sustainable, resilient jobs in our community, co-ops offer a really viable solution that if we choose to participate that way, we can make sure that our neighbors, our community, our family members, you know, have access to dignified jobs and sustainable livings and lifestyle, and that we have, you know, kind of a whole supply chain that can offer that.
Well, and we're actually going to take a break right there, because I want to start talking about the supply chain. So stay tuned. We're visiting with Wheatsville Co-op. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
Stay tuned. More Austin iLab is coming up on the new Talk Radio 96.3 and 1370. Welcome back to Austin iLab on the new Talk Radio 96.3 and 1370.
Welcome back to the Austin Innovation Lab. We are sitting down with Rosemarie Klee, President of the Board of Wheatsville Co-op, here at Co-op Month on the Austin Innovation Lab. Before the break, you know, I had asked you kind of why co-op? Why should people go the co-op route? And you gave a great response for that. But kind of talk a little bit about your supply chain. Talk about how Wheatsville Co-op is connected to Austin. Just spend some time kind of delving into that, because I think that's a great story in and of itself also.
Sure. And I'm going to just preface this by saying I need to talk more on the conceptual level, since I'm more on the governance level of the organization and not on the operations level. We have fabulous people that can go into a lot of detail about, there's so much thought that's put into every single thing that's on our shelf and how it ties into our values and the values of our community, and really like the ultimate outcomes that we're trying to achieve. And the stated ends of Wheatsville are that we want to be at the center of a thriving community centered on kindness, hospitality, and generosity, a robust cooperative economy, and easy access to sustainable, healthy food solutions. So that's kind of big.
Yeah, that's a mouthful
going on there. So in terms of Austin and supply chain, certainly I think you see that in the store, that we really try to, you know, we carry a lot of the local value added products, like pretty much any local value added product that you can think of that you'd see at the farmer's market, you know, you'll see it on our shelves as well. And that always makes me smile, because I go to the farmer's market and, you know, my South Austin soap people will show me like, oh, look, we're making these laundry detergent now. And I'm like, do we carry that at Wheatsville? And I go, and of course we carry it at Wheatsville. That's, or you know, awesome. Go to the Brewers Festival and hear about our first sake brewery in Austin, the only organic sake brewery in the country, and you know, next thing I know, it's on the shelves of
Wheatsville. You've got it.
So there's really this emphasis on certainly the value added, and you know, our local beers, our local hummus and cheese, and you know, everything that we're producing on that level. Certainly the other level is in agriculture, and you know, to the extent that we can support local egg producers, and that's something that we really are very clear about when we think about opening a second store, that this isn't about growth for growth's sake. This is growth for creating more benefit to community. And so where now we can support, you know, two or three local egg producers as we grow and we have more sales volume and more people, that we can support that many more local egg producers, and in terms of the, you know, all the other produce that we sell. So when you go there, you'll see the signs of where the produce comes from, which farm, how far away it is. That's really a big priority for us. And it really has been this process of growing our farmers, because, you know, 10 years ago, we didn't have nearly as many farmers as we do now. And this is becoming kind of a marketing pitch in a way, not just with Wheatsville, but like other organizations. I mean, for us, it's been what we've always done. Before, it was about, you know, a branding type of thing. I mean, Wheatsville was created to create this kind of food system, but now that it's more fashionable, there's even more competition for, you know, having access to being able to buy that. So I think we're trying to develop those markets as well. And I think we try to treat the people that are it part of that supply chain better than anyone else does, because right. we really care about their viability and their success as businesses. And then I think it extends beyond just the Austin community when we think about, you know, selling meat. Like, that's a choice that we all want to think really carefully about. Selling fish especially, and we have some sense of, you know, if you want to keep fish on the menu, there are a lot of challenges that we face, and we need to be really thoughtful about that. So there's a lot of real careful selection. I mean, our buyers actually go visit these people and interview them and bring them into town so that we can really understand that this isn't just a marketing ploy. They're not just, you know, hitting the big bullet points, but that they really mean it all the way through. So we're really trying to support and create more of that economy, because if you're just talking about how much does this cost versus another, you're kind of missing the point of, unless we make these choices encompassing other pieces of value, we are never going to have the option to have access to more sustainable food.
Addressing some of those hidden costs that aren't always reflected in the price tag.
Absolutely.
Another question that comes to mind more generally about the relationship between Wheatsville and Austin is, in a town that is in some places synonymous for its relationship with a different grocer, namely Whole Foods, what sort of opportunities are there to cooperate with some of the other more established food providers, grocery stores in Austin? What kind of relationships can Wheatsville develop with places like Whole Foods?
You know, I don't know that there is likely to be a direct like partnership, but I know that, you know, I think of my pet nonprofit, my favorite local organization, Urban Roots, and how, you know, we see the power of what they do in the community. And not only does Wheatsville support them, but Whole Foods is a major supporter of what they do. So I think that there are symbiotic kind of entities that we're trying to support. So a lot of the same farmers that we support, other grocers in town are trying to support. So I think that's probably the biggest thing that we can do, and just you know, find these ways to create this idea, and then to like really challenge us to mean it in a very sincere way. So if we say we're going to support this nonprofit, or we're going to support this kind of farm, we'd like to really push people and set the bar for, well, and this is how we're going to treat people. And, you know, if we're going to support this organization, we're going to try and support what they're already trying to do, not, you know, make them do jumping jacks to, you know, get our support or to look good in a marketing piece of material for us. Likewise for farmers, you know, thinking about like, well, what kind of margins are we going to do? And I'm really getting out of my territory here, because that to a lot of extent sure. is an operational question. I definitely want to touch though on that when you talk about like the price thing, because I think Michael Pollan says it in a really wonderful way when asked this question, you know, how are we going to overcome this challenge of, you know, our environment needs us to look at agriculture in a whole different way. But, and then in terms of social justice, you know, organic food is more expensive, especially when you really care about like the meaning of that rather than the labeling of that, because there's been a huge amount of erosion in terms of the caliber of that moniker. But
in terms of the labeling,
well, yeah,
what people call organic,
right? So
marketing side,
yeah. So if you look at a lot of our farms that are local, like they use organic practices and maybe exceed those, but there is a huge cost associated with getting certified. And likewise, as you know, Walmart realizes, oh, there's a lot of cachet in that label, they start moving in and trying to like lower the bar for what that means. And so I think as consumers, it's really difficult for consumers to be able to take the time to be really aware of that. And I think Wheatsville really stands as like a stalwart trying to protect and really protect the integrity of what these things mean and understand them and make careful choices around that, because organic isn't the same as, you know, one organic thing isn't the same as another organic thing necessarily. And the way Michael Pollan puts it is not this question of why is cheap food so well, he turns it around, like, why is cheap food so cheap? And we need to really, like, think about all of the costs in cheap food. We need to think about the subsidies that are being paid and how that affects what is available. I mean, this crisis around, like, you know, sodas and high fructose corn syrup, like, that product is subsidized in a way that you can't even compete if you're trying to sell something that's more healthful, that's less environmentally damaging.
And that echoes a conversation that we have sometimes with other guests in different industries. We talk with people in clean energy a lot, and there's often a conversation about how some of the older, more established forms of energy production have that monopoly, that edge that's hard to overcome if you're trying to do things in a different way.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting point, that it's really this question of, if you want to look all the way through cradle to grave, if you want to ask that question deeply, not just as a marketing ploy, how will you ask it and what answers will you come to? And we try to be really sincere about that, because we, at our core, we only exist to create benefit for our owners. It's not about, you know, creating profit or benefit for a subset of people. And so it's really about, like, uncovering the truth and figuring out how we can create a better world.
Yeah, well, tell us real quick. We're out of time, but tell us real quick, how can people get involved? How can they support Wheatsville Co-op?
Oh, thank you for asking. Well, I definitely would like to encourage everyone to come to the store, check it out, have lunch there, ask questions, meet people, tell your friends. I think, you know, the first thing is just, you know, coming, spending time with us. If you choose to become an owner, we love that. We welcome that. And we're also part of this, like, broad cooperative community. So think about where you're banking. Think about where you go buy beer. But yeah, I think really come check us out. Help us. Give us your feedback. If there's anything that we can do to serve you better as a consumer, participate in the conversations that we have. Because if you care about how we can really change the world, those are the conversations that we're having. And especially as a board member, I mean, we are really trying to ask these questions around what do we need to know and what can we really do as an organization.
Absolutely. Well, hey, check them out online at wheatsville.coop, and you can check out this podcast online at www.austinilab.com. Check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. See you next week.
If you know of an innovative company in Central Texas that would like to be featured on the Austin iLab, we want to hear from you. Please contact us online. Our website is austinilab.com. Our email address is austinilab@gmail.com. And you can find us on Facebook and on Twitter at Austin iLab. Join us again next week for more stories of innovation in Austin. Thanks for listening.